for 25 years. Nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
C.D. Lamb has caught 8 balls for 114 and a touchdown. Play fake. Boot to the right. Looking down the field. Lamb! 10! 5! Victory! Cowboys win! The ghosts are exorcised.
Good morning. It's PFT Live, a.k.a. Mike, along with Mike, at least on Monday mornings. This is the sixth time already we've done this, Mike. It feels like we have been doing this for a very long time. And I mean that in a good way. You may relate to that, and you may think in a bad way, like, oh, God, I've been dealing with this jerk 6 weeks already. But great to have you, as always, on Mondays. And welcome to everybody out there enjoying the program on Peacock, NBCSN, the podcast, Sky Sports. Welcome in all. We've got 2 hours to talk football. And even though it wasn't a great weekend, there were still more great games.
Oh, there absolutely was. Listen, this started out, I know we had our little text chain going, man, these are some bad games going on. And listen, 17 games we have now, it's going to happen. You're going to get some duds. But boy, then some got exciting. We finish off with an overtime last night as well. So you're always going to get some interesting ones. We actually got a good one in London too. I mean, we always send bad teams over there, but we got at least an exciting ending and a team getting off the schneid. So always some interesting things happening.
And think about this. We had 4 windows yesterday for the second time this year and final time this year, starting at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, continuing until overtime ended with the Steelers beating the Seahawks. But in each of the 4 windows, there was a game that went to the wire or was decided in overtime. 3 overtime games, 4 games in all decided in the final minute of regulation or overtime. That's now 23 through 6 weeks. 19 through 5 was a record. I assume that 23 through 6 is a record because it's 4 more. And we still got one more tonight.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're setting records. What was it last week? It was with missed kicks. You know, the kickers had a bad day. You know, yesterday some had a better day that we'll talk about. But it's always something. Just when you think you've seen everything, things come out. Players, and we'll discuss as well, setting records for wins. You know, it was so there. As we say, there, while there are duds, there are always some games and some reason to say, oh, this is the NFL. This is why it's the greatest sport in the land.
Okay, before we get to the games, I need to peel back the curtain just a little bit, and I wish I had a curtain instead of a door, and I'll explain that momentarily. I have a bad habit of if I get up before 6:30, I start working on the website, and I try to get a story or two posted, and I push it longer than I should to commence the process of, you know, toupee adjustment and shaving and showering and all of that. So I did it today. I got up at 6. I shouldn't have. because I took it all the way to 642. I mean, I really will push it if I get in the groove. So it was time to go start the shower. And I like to get the shower going. I like to get the water going hot. Turned the water on, right? Turned it on, got it going. And I don't have a shower curtain. I got one of those doors that slide, and they're heavy. And I didn't know how heavy they were, because as I slid the door, I didn't get my head out of the way, and I got popped, and it's swollen, and it hurts. So I have a new injury, Mike. We talked a few weeks ago about my litany of non-professional athlete injuries. I got a new one. I'm going to have a big old swollen cut me, Mick, and it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger because it just happened 15 minutes ago. Thanks to a shower door.
Listen, okay, there's a couple of things here. Now I feel like we're doing a radio show, so I feel at home. So normally when we do, anybody does an early morning show and they're pushing the envelope toward the top of the show, it's because they woke up late or something like that. Your reasoning is you're working, overworking. You're working so much. Wow, I mean, nice kind of sliding in the fact that you're getting a lot of work done
truth.
At 6 in the morning. Well,
but
well
it's
I know,
truth.
I know, but I know. And nice job getting that in there. I enjoyed that because it led up to you could have just went with the shower story, but you had to set it up again, which is a great radio thing. You set it up by saying, I was working so damn hard, you know, before the show. And then as far as the injury was concerned, I don't know who's tougher, you or Baker Mayfield, his shoulder sliding out and going and getting popped back in and continuing to play, or you hitting your head with the shower door and somehow, some way, Mike, managing to sit here and us be able to do a two-hour show with, I mean, it is probably swelling by the second. I don't know. Exactly. Somebody's going to have to cut you. It is going to be a cut me, Mick moment, and I can't wait to see it.
It is my second shower-related accident in about 15 years. I sustained a concussion when I slipped and fell and hit my head on that railing that you have to step over, you know, in the event that you want to take a bath. First of all, I haven't taken a bath in decades. I hate that railing, especially because I planted my head against it once. However, I will say this. I've never been punched in the face in my life, and that may amaze many. I can't imagine getting punched in the face. The friggin' shower door hurt. How does anybody survive getting punched in the face?
So I'll give you the realistic version of that is, and first, falling in the shower, I mean, you may want to start taking baths. They're going to be a lot safer for you, it seems, if you're having two shower injuries like that. And I'll tell you the biggest difference in the world of getting punched in the face is you're in a situation where you're expecting to get punched in the face in a boxing ring or something like that, so your adrenaline takes over. You're never expecting to close your own shower door on your own head. So the unexpected slamming into your face is really the thing that catches you off guard. Because it probably isn't that big of a hurt and injury, though, in your case. It may put you on the IR after
is.
The show. We'll have to see.
It may.
But,
it
yeah,
may.
That's what seems. I you know what? I wish I was there with you in person so I could really mock you to your face.
And punch me in my face. I need one on
well,
this side to balance out this. The swelling, actually, it's not as noticeable as I thought it was going to be. But, I mean, I yelled out, what in the – and then I used one of Sim's favorite words. It just – and it's right. I had no idea it was coming. Anyway, the moral of the story
I
is,
actually
kids,
see it. I do actually see it. I actually see it. I do.
My advice to everyone out there, don't get up a second earlier than you absolutely have to. Sleep until the moment where you know you get up and you go, because if you start screwing around doing other things, then you have even less time, and then you hurry, and then you get hit in the face with a shower door. All right,
friend, is some great – that is some great life advice right there. Don't get up before you have to. Perfect.
Cowboys at the Patriots, they woke up just in time to get out of New England with a win. You know, Mike, it felt like one of those games, and this is difficult for us when we're doing Football Night in America. I can't really watch and appreciate, and it's one of the games I'll watch this morning after we're done with the show in full detail, but you pick up enough of it. And the one thing I picked up, Cowboys let the Patriots just kind of hang around. Cowboys should have kicked the crap out of the Patriots. And if you let a Bill Belichick team hang around, you're going to pay for it. It's a testament to the Cowboys that they still found a way to win in overtime, because this had all the earmarks of a game that New England was going to find a way to win.
Well, I mean, listen, Dallas hadn't beaten New England since 87. They're 0-5 against Belichick. So Belichick is good at this stuff. That's why he's one of the best coaches ever. That's why he's going into the Hall of Fame. He's good at these things. And you're right. You let him hang around and they're going to be around, because Dallas is a better team. But New England has a really good defense. They keep the point total down and they can play defense well. Dallas is a big-time running team, and Dallas, you know, while they had, as far as running, 122 yards, that's still, you know, they're used to more than that with that rushing attack that they have. So I think New England's defense was good going into the game, but I agree with you. Dallas was a better team. Dallas should have took control of that game. But, wow, what a game. I mean, it's, 17-14 going into the fourth quarter. New England's got a lead of 21-20, and then all hell breaks loose with five scores going on, you know, boom, 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 in that fourth quarter. And the three we had in the last couple of minutes made it such an exciting game, a back-and-forth game. And I think the most amazing thing was Mac Jones, a quarterback for the New England Patriots, throw a deep pass down the field on that 75-yard touchdown, because that's just not New England's offense. It was a pass that actually traveled 15, 20 yards down the field. You just don't see the ball go down the field much with New England. Even when Brady was there, it's not that kind of a offense, you know, unless you had Randy Moss there. The year he was there, then you could do that. But what a play that was when they needed it most, after a Trayvon Diggs pick six. They get that monster play where Diggs kind of bites on the out route. But then what is the safety, DeMonte Kazee, what is he doing as a safety trying to – he's the free man back there. I mean, to do what he did after Bourne gets open on that play was somewhat amazing to me. I didn't really understand that after Diggs got beat. But what a great play by Diggs, back-to-back scores. And then, you know, we get to overtime. I mean, what it turned out to be an extremely exciting game after a game. You're right. When you're watching it, you just kept going, well, New England's hanging around. They're kind of hanging around. You know, that's going to make it an interesting finish. And, boy, is that an understatement. It was way more than an interesting finish.
Trayvon Diggs has an interception in all six games this season, tied for the longest streak to begin a season in NFL history. But he had, right after the pick six, he got burned, he got twisted around inside, and that happens. And look, he's been compared to some great cornerbacks so far this year, and what he's doing is phenomenal. The younger brother, Stephon Diggs, great ball skills, has more touchdowns this year than his older brother, and doesn't play offense. But, if he was Deion Sanders, if he was Darrell Revis in his prime, they would not be throwing at him. One of the reasons he's got all these interceptions is teams still throw at him. And we saw in the long touchdown why they still throw at him. He's not a shutdown. He's got great ball skills. He will make the catches that plenty of other defensive backs won't. And we hear all the time, well, that's why he plays defense. That is why he plays defense, because he doesn't have the ball skills that a receiver has. Trayvon Diggs does, and that's one of the reasons why he's got these interceptions, one in every game at least for six games.
Oh, listen, I'm with you. We're not saying he's that shutdown corner. You put him on the best receiver, and he takes that receiver out of the game. But listen, he's certainly going to be in discussion for Defensive Player of the Year right now for what he's doing. And I'll say again, you know, you get beat occasionally. Even the greatest get beat occasionally, and he got beat. Listen, it was an out and up, and he went with the out, and he got spun. But that's the reason, though, Mike, you have a safety back there. You know, you got a safety free, kind of roaming and seeing what's going on, and the ball's coming right at him, and the receiver's coming right at him. I have no idea what he was doing. I mean, you're right there to make the play. If they get the catch, great, okay, but make the play right when they make the catch. Your corner got burned, but you're back there. You're free. That's the whole idea of this thing, is make a play when it comes right down the middle of the field. So there were two big mistakes on that play. A nice pass by Mac Jones, without a doubt, and then really an easy touchdown run because he wasn't even barely touched.
And this is the fundamental difference, and this is why Diggs will get consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. We see so many times the defensive back who doesn't have the instinct of balls in the air and I can go get it, the instinct is player is coming and I'm going to go try to hit him. I'm going to try to dislodge the ball. I'm going to try to stop him. Now, the safety in this case failed on both counts. But we saw it last night with Jamal Adams. He had an opportunity to make an interception. He's right. Focused on the hit. When you've got that instinct, and it's an instinct, you either have it or you don't. Trayvon Diggs has it. Ball's in the air. I'm going to go get it. And that's what can make a guy special. Even if he isn't a shutdown corner, he can still be special because when you can transform yourself from defensive back to receiver and get the ball, shift from I'm playing defense to I'm basically playing offense, that's a rare skill. And that's why not many guys have interceptions in six straight games.
Oh, listen, it's exactly right. But you're right. Like Jamal Adams is a hitter. You know, he's known for his hitting, so some guys would rather hit and dislodge. Now, I don't know if some have maybe changed their way since they started enforcing the rules we've seen over the last few years, and you could find a little more for these hard hits, but, you know, it's kind of ingrained in you. But, we call them ball hawks. You have guys that just have that, you know, that innate ability to get to the ball, to find it, to break on it, to know the angle to break on it. And one of the big things is you don't really notice it, but they do it is to bait a quarterback, make it look like the guy they're covering is open, and then they make the break on the ball. You're right, the instinctive ones that can make that move. And, boy, Diggs is certainly showing it this year without a doubt.
There was a concern. I want to pivot to it while I'm thinking of it because it looms large over the Cowboys, who have a bye in Week 7. They play the Vikings Sunday Night Football Week 8. The Vikings on a bye as well, so both teams can focus on getting ready for each other. Dak Prescott, the quarterback of the Cowboys, final play. Great. Hey, walk-off, touchdown, CeeDee Lamb. It's over. But word began to trickle out that there's a concern now because Dak Prescott suffered a right calf injury on that final play when he threw the touchdown to CeeDee Lamb, was assisted to the locker room by teammate Ezekiel Elliott, and he insisted after the game, I could have kept going. I'm fine. I promise you that. That's what he said. But this is one of those instances, Mike, and I'm not reporting anything at this point, but I'll share this. I tried to find out more last night about what's going on, and there are different types of doors that get slammed in your face sometimes. The door that was slammed in my face last night as I tried to find out more made me think there's more to find out. And it made me think this is circle the wagons, shut your mouth mode. Now, that's not nearly enough to pin to, well, he's in danger of missing the game in 2 weeks. But it's just one of those instinctive things that make me think we need to keep an eye on this because there's something about this that's different from the usual case because we're not going to get the kind of transparency I provided about the shower door I took to the face when it comes to Dak Prescott's right calf. I guarantee you that.
No, we are not. And I know he went to the presser in a walking boot. But again, so much of that is preventative right after a game to try and keep any kind of a swelling down or motion of that joint area down. We're talking about a calf. If it is a calf, you're talking about a muscle. Is it the calf? Is it down to the Achilles? I mean, there's going to be a lot of questions about what it is. And as you mentioned with the bye week, luckily you have that extra week to see, you know, how it can respond to things. So we're just going to have to wait and see. You know, it looks like he's walking okay, and then, he starts to limp more and more. So something's obviously hurting and or tightening up to the point where, now this is 24/7 rehab time for Dak. You know, if he's got to miss practice, so be it. You know, we're at that point with him, and this is another offense that got over 500 yards again. I mean, they're one of the most balanced teams in the league without question, one of the best teams in the NFC. So we know, his body parts are very, very important to this team. They're not going to go anywhere without it. We're understanding Dak Prescott's value, and still it makes you look back on what was going on with the contract and he and Jerry Jones and just shake your head even more that Jerry kept paying everybody else, instead of Dak, and finally they got it worked out. But I think the best news here is you have the extra week. So and again, as you mentioned, you're one of those guys that tries to find out and you have your ways. And if doors are getting shut at your face, it's an eyebrow raising moment, at least now. But we're one day removed from it. So it's one of those you're going to have to let that thing settle down and really kind of see where we are.
Yeah, and it all remains to be seen what the damage is, how bad it is. I remember after Christian McCaffrey had his hamstring strain, you know, one of the talking points, especially with a calf or a hamstring, a soft tissue type of a strain, it needs to rest, it needs to heal. You have to know how to back off, because McCaffrey apparently had some sort of a re-injury last week, because he's practicing, and all of a sudden he's shut down, and he's on IR 3 weeks after suffering the injury. You've got to give these things time to heal. If it is some sort of a soft tissue strain for Dak Prescott, he'll have 2 weeks. But we saw all the way back at Hard Knocks, Mike, this guy's determined. This guy is focused. And now that they're 5-1 and the arrow is pointing straight up for the Cowboys, he's not going to want to shut down. And it's going to take everything the Cowboys and the trainers and the doctors can do to get him to let it rest, let it heal, and hope that he can be ready to go in 13 days. And if not, so be it, because if you push it there, then the next game you may miss. Then the next game after that you may miss, and at some point you've got to take a step back and let it heal if it is some sort of a strain. And it's something that's going to require some healing, clearly. The question is how much.
Yeah, listen, and that's why I always talk about soft tissue injuries real early in the season as opposed to later in the season. Later in the season, you kind of know where you stand. If you're already kind of a playoff team, you can just shut somebody down and not have to worry about bringing them back early. If it's early in the season, you don't know where you are just yet, so you're going to want to get back quicker. I can get it with Christian McCaffrey, you know, in that team, the way Carolina started out and just how vanilla and mundane that offense is without him. Players want to play, so he wants to get back. So early on in the season, you rush it to get back, so your team, if you're winning, you want to stay winning, or if you start losing, you don't fall into a bit of a hole. So you try and rush it, hence you re-injure it. So Dallas is in a pretty good situation right now. Listen, sitting there, especially in the division. You know, they're way up in the division. So could they afford Dak to lose some time? Yes, but Dallas is already, and I know even though we're not halfway through the season, Dallas already has to be thinking about playoffs, and you think about home field as well. But you don't do that now at the risk of, you know, a continuing injury. But I guarantee you, that's what you think about. We'll talk about it in the AFC as well. You know, who's getting the wins? Who controls where the playoffs are going through? Well, Dallas, we know Arizona is the only undefeated team left. Do we think they're going to go undefeated? We'll have to wait and see. Dallas with just the one loss. I mean, if you're going to make the playoffs, then you'd like to host some games, even though that's not, you don't have to host every game to get to the Super Bowl. But there are reasons during the season you can just say, we're shutting you down. We're in a good spot right now. Dallas is in a great spot division-wise, but they're thinking way past division-wise. And again, this will be the talk because we don't know what the injury is. But if there's any doubt at all, you got to wait on him. You got to wait because you know you're in position to be in the playoffs, and the whole thing is about how are you feeling at that point of the season, where is your team health-wise?
And you make a great point, Mike, because look, in the NFC East, they currently have as many wins as the other three teams combined. They should win this division. Even if Dak Prescott misses an extended period of time, they should be able to win this division. The question is, how much higher than four can you reasonably climb on the playoff tree? You've got the Packers, who are looking pretty damn good after somehow losing week one, and that loss becomes more glaring as time passes, frankly, as the Packers keep rolling up victories. You've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers looking formidable at 5-1, and they hold the tiebreaker over the Cowboys. And you've got the Cardinals at 6-0 and the Rams at 5-1, who stomped the Giants yesterday.
Yeah.
So even with Prescott wire to wire, the top of the NFC is so good, you may not be looking at much higher than four. So the point is even more valid. You want Prescott to be 100% when January rolls around. And if that means conceding the 1, 2, and 3 seed, so be it. You got to be ready for the 5 seed, because the 5 seed is going to be the Cardinals or the Rams, and they're going to be a tough out in the wild card round. Probably that Monday night game, massive primetime audience, although maybe Sunday night. But the Cowboys are going to be hosting a game, and they're going to draw a tough opponent in January.
Yeah, they are. And the bottom line is, no matter what you're seeded, you're not winning without Dak, right? I mean, the Cowboys look like one of the best teams in the NFL. And, man, you just mentioned the teams. The top of the NFC is amazing because there's more than a few teams. But you're going nowhere without Dak. Nowhere. So And again, this is what's going to happen today because we don't know the injury. He could be fine by Thursday. We have no idea and be back to a regular practice routine, but we don't know. But just this general conversation of when you need him, at the end of it all, whether you're the last seed or the first seed, you're going nowhere without Dak Prescott as your quarterback. So you better make damn sure he's 100% before he steps back on that field.
Speaking of going nowhere, the New England Patriots, this really is stunning to me. And I mentioned this last night. There is no category in the standings for moral victories. If there were, the Patriots would have at least two right now because they hung tight and tough with the Buccaneers and also with the Cowboys, teams that are better on paper than the Patriots. But 0-4 at home, first time since 1993. That was the first year of the Drew Bledsoe era. He was the first overall pick that year, also Bill Parcells. But they're 2-4. Mac Jones is looking good, not great. There are signs of promise. He took a hit yesterday. That was, if he hadn't received his welcome to the NFL moment, my goodness, he got it yesterday from Randy Gregory. But, you know, Mike, the window gets more and more toward being completely shut for the Patriots. Four losses? I don't know what you got to do. With 17 games, I don't know what anybody's got to do to get in. Is it 9? Is it 10? Is it 11? Patriots were 11-5 in 2008 without Tom Brady and didn't get in. Here they are at 2-4 with 11 games. The math is very hard for me, especially since I have a head injury. There are 11 games left, and you've already lost four.
Listen, I'm with you. And first off, I'm sorry you didn't have an independent doctor there to check you out right away to know if you are concussed or not. I think it's something we have to look at. But
I don't think I'm concussed, but let me say this. Nobody cares, but this really does hurt. I can feel the pain emanating through my face. It really is painful to me. I am playing injured. All right, go ahead, Mike.
There's pain pills. There's, you know, the needle if you want to numb it up. There's a lot of ways to go.
I didn't have time.
If you feel like you
I didn't have time. I need to have somebody run me some ibuprofen up here. Go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Yeah. Patriots.
That's okay. So, yeah, the Patriots, we look at, the top of the AFC like we look at the NFC, and we see the teams there. Obviously, now the Patriots, we talked about them winning the division all the time. Now, the way the Bills are set up, we're going to be looking at them for a number of years until they could be caught by another team in the AFC East, and who will it be first? I think I would probably still say it would be New England actually retooling and be in that team before I'd say Miami or the Jets. We'll have to wait and see. I don't think anybody really in the South, quite honestly. You have Baltimore in the North, Cleveland, we're obviously going to talk about. I don't think Pittsburgh scores enough, even though they're playing better. And then the West, I mean, what the hell with going on with the Chiefs and more interceptions by Mahomes? They get the win, but them and the Chargers and what they're doing as well. I look at New England this way. When you say the window closing, I don't agree with that because you have a young quarterback who I think is a good quarterback. So now it's going to be, what do you put around him? As I said, their defense is pretty good. They played two of the top teams in the league in Tampa Bay and Dallas pretty well. So I do like their defense. So a lot of it's going to be the pieces of the puzzle around them. And you know, we want to look back again to last year, you know, what happened with them. Remember, they had the most opt-outs in the league. The most. They had over a handful of starters opting out, you know, during the COVID season and injuries as well. But injuries, you can't use as an excuse because everybody has injuries. So I see them with the ability to rebuild around a young quarterback in Mac Jones and be the team that eventually will challenge Buffalo at some point in the AFC East. So while this year, certainly it's not going to happen, the way they're kind of retooling, I'm really interested to see where they end up.
Yeah, and look, I don't think the window's closing on the franchise. You're starting into a new era with a quarterback that has shown promise. But for this season, a season I thought the Patriots had a good chance of putting it together on the fly and getting back to the playoffs, because when you have Bill Belichick, you're always going to be in the mix. For this season, four losses, six games in, I'm struggling to figure out how many more you can afford to have before you're just done. You got to run the table at this point. Can you go 12-5? I think 12-5 would get you. And that's the thing, we just don't know. We have nothing to compare it to with this extra game. But it's a shame for the Patriots that they've had two games, tough games, close games against elite teams that have one loss each right now. And they've just come up short. And here they are at 2-4, and they've got plenty of work to do to turn it around. One of the other great teams in the AFC is the Baltimore Ravens. And, you know, I thought, Mike, after they beat the Chiefs, that would propel them to some big wins because they had a signature victory in 2019 and that propelled them to a run of some really big wins. Didn't happen. But you know what? They had the Monday night miracle. 22-3 was the score. They come back and win it. And Right. Now, what I thought was the game of the day, closest match, Chargers. Oh, Chargers getting 3 points. Man, I like Chargers getting 3 points. I thought the Chargers would cover, but the Ravens would have a Justin Tucker field goal to win the thing late. Nope. 34-6, a splattering of the Chargers. Let's hear from John Harbaugh before we break down where the Ravens currently are, because he's feeling pretty good about where his team currently is.
Do you think this score today raised some eyebrows around the league?
Yeah, probably. Probably. It's okay with me. We like raising eyebrows, you know, in a good way, so we're happy about that.
I'd say the Ravens' performance yesterday was more like the closing of a shower door on the heads of the L.A. Chargers. I mean, who saw this coming? Because the Chargers were playing as well as anyone. The Ravens playing as well as anyone. And, man, the Ravens, short week after an overtime game on Monday night. They didn't have to travel, but still, they've had a couple of these Monday night games where they've had to put in extra work. And the Ravens looked ready to roll, and the Chargers simply did not, Mike.
So this was a game that, as a former lineman, even on the defensive side, a lineman, this was a game I loved because this was controlled by the lines of scrimmage, both lines of scrimmage for Baltimore, their offensive line and their defensive line. They were in control of this entire game. Long drives on offense, stuffing defense as well. I mean, they just took it out of the Chargers, a team that is used to scoring a ton of points, got six. So they were out of their element. They were absolutely out of their element and out of their game plan, which is something they haven't been used to a lot this year. And all credit to Baltimore. Now, listen, the Chargers' defense is better against the pass, and Baltimore didn't pass for a lot of yards, though they didn't really have to. They ran for a lot of yards. And I thought it interesting what Justin Herbert said after the game, because this goes into game planning. This goes into everything that happens before all the fans watch the game on Sunday. This is everything that starts during the week, normally on Wednesday, when you put a game plan in of how you're going to attack your opponent. Justin Herbert said after the game, he said, "We saw looks out of them we have not seen on film." Because that's what you do as an opponent, is you study their tape. You study their tendencies. I get a game plan. Again, analytics have been around for a long time, just not now. I get the game plan. They like this formation on this down and distance, this part of the field, this time of the game. You get everything in a game plan. And you study that game plan. You break down that game plan. You break down film and watch how it associates with the game plan that you're studying. And then when the quarterback says, "They were doing things we had never seen on film. They were disguising in a way we hadn't seen. They were disguising pressure one way, bringing pressure another way that we hadn't seen them do on film." So now all of a sudden, you normally are adjusting on the fly during every game. Every time you go back to the sideline, you're talking with coaches, you're talking about things going on, and you make some adjustments, and certainly at halftime. But I don't hear this a whole lot, where we kept seeing things that we had never seen on film from them before and the disguising that they were doing. So they had their number. I mean, so credit to Baltimore on this one. They had their number, and the Chargers couldn't make the adjustments for it, and they just and as they just slowly rolled on them. And when you're physically dominated on both sides of the ball, there's nothing worse. You can lose a game that passes for a lot of yards and things like it, but you know when you're dominated on the lines of scrimmage. And that's what happened in this game. And that's what happened with the game plan as well, confusing Herbert and that offense and taking charge. So that to me was the epitome of a week's work. You know, when you finish that game and you win that game and you say, okay, everything we did worked. Well, this is the epitome of that. We put in a game plan that they hadn't seen on film, we hadn't had on film of some of the things we were doing, and it was successful, it worked to a T, it confused them, and we stomped them. I mean, you want to talk about the victory cigar coming out, Baltimore deserved one after this.
And that's an excellent point, because the Chargers were completely throttled offensively, and the defense had been one of the big questions for the Ravens. Sims and I have been talking about that a lot this year. Even as Lamar Jackson begins to flourish as a passer, the offense has a lot of potential. The defense isn't what it used to be. Well, for yesterday, right, it was, because a team that scored 47 against the Browns traveled cross-country and was only able to muster 26 yards rushing, with Herbert leading the way. Austin Eckler, 6 carries, yeah, for 7 yards. The passing under 200 yards, total points 6. And it helped that the Baltimore offense chewing it up on the ground. Oh. You've got a bunch of different guys getting it done, from Devontae Freeman to Lamar Jackson, Latavius Murray. Le'Veon Bell scored a touchdown. They were chipping in, and they had 187 rushing yards. They have started their streak all over again. It's at 1 of consecutive 100-yard rushing games for the Ravens, Mike.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, you mentioned time. And you think about this as time on the field. That defense for the Chargers, how long they were on the field. I mean, Baltimore had the ball for over 38 minutes of this game, and the Chargers just under 22. So that Charger defense was on the field for over 38 minutes. That can wear and tear you, especially when you're running the ball. There is nothing like getting run on over and over and over again. Again, that's what I talk about when you physically get beat down with 12-play drive, 10-play drives, going 80 yards, going 90 yards. That is a physical beat down, and it's really, quite honestly, worse than about anything that can happen to you on the field as a football player, especially as a lineman. So, again, I say the domination by both line, now the both sides of the ball did well, but I look at the line. When you control that line of scrimmage, we always talk about it. We always throw it out there like a cliche. Well, don't turn the ball over and control the lines of scrimmage. Well, you know what? It's real. It's real, and it means something when you do it, and you saw that in Baltimore when they controlled both lines of scrimmage.
There was that weird quote last week that I guess traces to Buddy Ryan from Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator of the Ravens, that Justin Herbert can throw a strawberry through a battleship. Well, he couldn't on Sunday. The battleship won over the strawberry on Sunday, and that defense was ready to go. And you know, that's that, Mike, I think it's important to underscore this. That is a sign of good coaching, because it's easy to get complacent. Things are working. We're not changing things up. We're not planning for the full season. You've got to be thinking, and this is how you map out your schedule. When are we going to show this? How long are we going to hold that? A lot of this stuff isn't just being brought up on the fly. There's a master plan in place from week 1 through week 18 of how it's going to go. And for the postseason, we've seen plenty of good teams fall apart in the postseason because they just kept doing what was working for them in the regular season. Good coaches are ready to pick it apart and attack it.
So understand again what goes on behind as you pull the curtain back to tell us, you know, you slammed yourself in the head with the shower door and you're, you know, halfway concussed. You know, going into the meeting rooms all week and what you just talked about and what the Wink Martindales of the world do for my side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, in the game plan and how you approach a game plan, because the coaches, you know, are always there before us and are always there after us. They're the ones preparing these game plans. So what are you looking at? First, you're preparing a game plan against an offense that you normally see. And a lot of times, or there are times, I should say, you'll see a defense get beat on plays and you'll go, wow, that's some bad defensive plays or bad defensive players or bad defensive calls. When, if you watch the play, you'll see defenders are actually in the right spot, but they're just not making the plays. So the defense called is actually one that would work, but then you have to execute the play as well. So just because there are big plays sometimes doesn't mean the call was a bad call. A lot of times it's you have a player that's in position to make a tackle. You have a player that's in position to break up a pass. You have a player that you want to be in a one-on-one situation, and they don't win the one-on-one situation. And then there are times when you flat out are getting beat and have to change that game plan on the fly. Or you see a team, they do something well, we don't defense it well. What are we going to do during the week to change that? And then you see what happened this week is, okay, this is what we've shown. This is what this offensive does. Now this is what we're going to do instead. We're going to do a few things different that we haven't done before. That is the coaching part of this thing, where the players are buying in, and all of a sudden you get the quarterback who's having a hell of a year for another team going, well, Well, we saw stuff we just hadn't seen all year on film. That just goes, that's just a coach sitting back in his seat, taking another puff on the cigar, saying, yeah, got you that time.
One last point before we take a break, too, because I want everyone to remember this week one next year. Not that anyone will, not that I will, but I always say you throw out week one. Now, as it relates to the Ravens, the Cowboys, the Packers, and the Bills, all four lost week one.
Yep.
Since then, they're 19-0 combined. And if the Bills beat the Titans tonight, they'll be 20-0. So throw out week one, because we've got four elite teams that lost week one and they have figured it out since then, including the Ravens with five in a row. And they are possibly on the verge of becoming dominant like the Bills have been. Unfortunately, they don't play in the regular season. Maybe they'll cross paths again in the postseason. When we return, we'll look at the Sunday night game that went to overtime and a late afternoon game that definitely did not go to overtime in Cleveland. We'll discuss those next here on PFT Live.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Mike, you talk a lot about great players. Seeing T.J. Watt step up in that moment, almost something that you guys expect at this point. Really,
no question. No question. That's how he's compensated. I don't think anyone is surprised by his ability to deliver in those moments. And yes, he's a great player, but it's about what he's willing to do in terms of preparation and conditioning himself and all the, you know, all of those things. It's not anything mystical about that playmaking, man. We're talking about a guy that's really talented, that works extremely hard, that's hyper-focused, prepared physically and mentally. And so that's what happens.
Mike Tomlin heaping praise on T.J. Watt, one of the best defensive players in the game. I remember back in the 2017 draft, T.J. Watt wasn't one of the guys that I was really paying close attention to as the round unfolded and he fell. But when the Steelers took him, that was that lightning bolt of, you know what? This makes a ton of sense. This is a match made in football heaven. T.J. Watt to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They see something. They have that defense. He fits in. And it's going to be fun to see how it unfolds. And he has flourished there. And signature moment last night. He's had plenty of others. But without him, Mike, they don't win that game last night. He had a couple of sacks, and he rips out the ball from Geno Smith in overtime, setting up the short field goal to win the game 23-20 in OT.
You know, it's become an art form now with pass rushers, and I guess some of it now, it's happened for a lot of years, and don't get me wrong. I mean, linemen have learned who stripped the ball from the quarterback. I get that. But I think it's happened more and more now when the emphasis on we're going to throw a flag if you hit the quarterback too hard. So a lot of times what you see now is you will see a player going for the ball, not just going for the tackle. We see actual fist, you know, clenching up like a punch to punch the ball. We see you actually eyeing the ball where it is and hitting the ball. You look at last night, T.J. Watt put his hand right on the ball. So there has been way more emphasis on that since it's been taken away of, hey, you can't hit the quarterback too hard. You can't land on the quarterback. You can't hit the quarterback low. So I think defensive players are doing the smart thing and saying, okay, well, if I can't do that, and I'm just – you see guys now, they'll try and hit the ball before they even try and wrap the quarterback, just trying to knock the ball out. That's really become more of an art form, I think, over the last, you know, decade to half a decade out there with these players. And Watt does a great – there are others just have a great knack for it to strip the ball, and that was obviously a huge one last night.
Geno Smith was not horrible. It took the Seahawks a while to get going. Once they did, they made it a game. It felt like it was going to be a steamroll by the Steelers. The Seahawks came out in the second half and began to make it a game. And Geno Smith acquitted himself well. And, you know, he's played extensively two straight games now. Both end up being losses, but both could have been wins. And he'll get more chances as Russell Wilson recovers from that middle finger injury. But, you know, that was a tough spot for the Seahawks. Their defense not good. The Steelers at home in prime time. And, I wasn't overly impressed with either team. I don't think we're going to see either one playing deep into January. But they've still got time to get better on the fly. And teams either get better or teams get worse. And, you know, if the Steelers can keep leaning on their defense and not have their offense screw it up, specifically not have Ben Roethlisberger try to extend plays or do pump fakes where the football squirts out of his hands, the Steelers can be a team that can kind of gut their way through some tough victories and maybe be in position to make it to the postseason.
Yeah, I know you had said that earlier. They were one of your teams. I disagree. I don't think they're going to be near the postseason. I just don't think they're good enough. But I thought last night that okay, Seattle has the worst defense in the league statistically. You don't have Russell Wilson to bail them out on offense. You have Geno Smith, a backup in there. So I thought this would be – and it was going that way. I thought it was going to be a big win for Pittsburgh. As you mentioned, Seattle has a nice comeback in the second half. Pittsburgh, I do think, can get some tough wins out there. I do think they can do that. Again, I don't think they have enough, especially offensively scoring – to be able to stay with the other teams in the AFC. And while their defense is good, I don't know if they're really good enough to hold some of these high-scoring teams down low enough for their offense to score points. Juju Smith-Schuster obviously on IR now. You get your tight end, Ebron, scoring a touchdown, a rushing touchdown, I think the third of his career. So you find other ways to kind of get the job done. So I kind of at Pittsburgh to take more control of this game and win it a little more handily than having to go to overtime very quickly. I'm very happy for Daryl Taylor. I mean, whenever you see a guy carted off, on a stretcher, and the rookie linebacker for Seattle was, I mean, that's a tense moment. It's an awful moment to have to see. And I know Pete Carroll said after the game that had feeling in all his extremities. He had the CT scan was clear. He was supposed to fly back with the team, but still. And I know a lot of times they take players off as a precautionary measure that they'll just not have them move. But it's just tough to watch and tough to see at times. So luckily it looks like things are going to be okay from that standpoint. So I just wanted to say that because you got to have your thoughts with somebody like that. It looks like everything is going to be fine there. As far as the game, boy, then it got crazy at the end, right? DK Metcalf making a catch and not getting out of bounds when they don't have any timeouts going up the field. You're going, what are you doing? You know, the clock's running. He gets the ball stripped out of his possession and they recover. But then the refs have to look to see if he was in bounds. It gives them time to kill the clock and kick that field goal, you know, to go over overtime. So it was kind of a weird ending as well. I was wondering what he was doing. I mean, you have no timeouts. There's 13 seconds left. Get out of bounds. He cuts back up the field trying to make a play. I mean, I understand what he was trying to do, but the thing to do was to get out of bounds because that could have been it. And luckily the review, you know, helped them get to the line and get the kill, even though they had seemed to get it before the ref stopped for the review. But that was a kind of a wild play before we even got to the strip sack at the end.
I thought that DK Metcalf believed he was going to muscle his way past the defensive back and score. I think that's what he was thinking. Almost like the Minneapolis Miracle, and that play was relevant yesterday for reasons we'll discuss coming up. But I remember when Stephon Diggs caught that pass, people were like, get out of bounds, get out of bounds. You're in position for the right field goal. Well, no, I can score also. I think Metcalf thought he could blast through the DB and get to the end zone. The only problem is he left the football behind. Another instance where they punched the ball out. Now, that whole replay review situation where there was no question for anyone with functioning eyes that it was a catch and it was a fumble.
Inbound.
No reason whatsoever to hit the button and say we need to take a full-blown look at this. And Mike Tomlin, if you were watching the game, whether or not you can read lips, he was extremely unhappy. There were some words uttered, and he uttered some more words after the game, none of them that I think need to be bleeped. But here's Mike Tomlin on what went down at the end of regulation with the replay review that gave the Seahawks a little more of a relaxed opportunity to set up the game-tying field goal.
I hated it.
Why's that?
I hated it. I cannot believe that game was stopped, a confirmed catch, no catch, in that moment. That's all I'm going to say.
What explanation did they give to you?
That's all I'm going to say. It was an embarrassment.
You know, I love it. I love it, though, when that's all I'm going to say. No, that's all I'm going to say. It was an embarrassment. Just, you know, that sometimes you just, it pays to just wait. It pay, because when they say no comment, when they forcefully say no comment, you know there's a chance a comment's going to pop out. And Mike Tomlin trying to walk the line of not having to make an involuntary contribution to the charity of the NFL's choice this week. But he clearly had strong feelings about the way things went, and it really was confusing. And I don't – look, they still got the ball off, and they snapped. And I know the stadium clock said triple zeros, but they still got the ball spiked into the ground before there was no time left on the clock.
I agree. So even if none of that happened, I still think they got the kill anyway. As you mentioned correctly, they just were able to do it more relaxed when the refs put 3 seconds back on the clock. But I guess the point is with Mike Tomlin, if they're now, as you said it, because I agree, I looked at that play and I thought, why are you reviewing it? But in all honesty, if you do need to review a play, even if it's at that point of the game, if there's one that actually makes a little more sense to review, I get it. You have to review it. You have to get it right. But it looked like there was no reason to review that one, and I understand why Mike was mad at that. But as we have both said, regardless, they would have killed it with enough time to kick a field goal, even without that review. So this kind of just added to it. And people will always say, well, he said he wasn't going to say any more about it, so why do you ask him? Oh, no, that's what the media will do. They keep asking. Yeah. Just as you mentioned, you go for that, you get that golden moment that you may get makes a headline or, you know, costs somebody a lot of money from the league.
Those last 10 seconds after the fumble, it's one of those things you could watch it 1,000 times and still miss something. There was a little flash there where there's an official who's chasing the guy with the ball like it's his kid and he took something from him and took off running. I mean, there's so many little things that are hilarious in that frenetic 10 seconds or so. But, you know, they got to where they needed to be. The Seahawks had a chance to kick the field goal. And Mike, what would have been awesome, and a fake field goal would have been awesome. The Steelers never would have seen that coming. A fake spike, Dan Marino style, would have been awesome. Would that not have been – and it's easy to say since the Seahawks lost anyway, what the hell, you should have tried it. But with the Steelers just kind of all discombobulated by what just went on, boy, that would have been a hell of an opportunity to surprise them either with a fake field goal or a fake spike.
Yeah, it would have been. And obviously you would have had to have something like that in before you even happened, because it was so frenetic at the end. You couldn't call that one on the fly. That would have to be, hey, if we get it, that's when you talk on the sidelines. If we get in this situation, let's try and do something like that. And while it would have been neat, especially when I'm sitting on my couch, you know, having a burger and a beer, you know, and I'm not out in the field having to go through that, I'm sure Seattle was thinking, listen, we're out of this game in the first half. We got ourselves back into this game in the second half. Let's take it to overtime. You know, we played much better in the second half than we did in the first half, that maybe we can keep that going. And then there's TJ Watt with the strip sack that says, no, we're going to end the game right now.
I want to go back to Daryl Taylor, because I had two questions that popped into my head. Well, one's an observation, one's a question. It really is amazing to me when you look at how he was injured. When you get that scrum of bodies, Mike, and you lived it, and I know when my son played high school football, I would hold my breath every time he was in that mosh pit of offensive and defensive line because that's what he played. It's amazing there aren't more injuries in that. It just shows you how easily it can happen when the bodies get mashed together like that. Whether it's leg injury, whether it's a shoulder, a pec, a head injury, a neck injury, it really is amazing that it doesn't happen more often. And secondly, when you have that kind of a delay that late in a game, Mike, as a player, I don't know if you lived through something like this. How do you keep yourself ready to play? How do you keep yourself ready to go?
And that's a great question, and I certainly have gotten asked that a few times because I have been in situations where there is a long delay like this, and then you have to get ready to play. You know how you do it, Mike? You know you have to get ready to play. I mean, it's almost as simple as that. And maybe some can do it better than others, but the bottom line is that person gets taken off the field. Now I'm on the field, and there's a guy over me, you know, who's trying to block me, and I'm trying to beat him. You just can't have it in your mind. And I'm not saying it's the easiest thing in the world to set it aside. You're a human being, you know, and you just saw your teammate or you just saw, you know, a peer of yours, if you're on the other team, get carted off and saying, you know what, could be me. You know, it could have been me, could be me on this next play, could be me two games from now. You don't know because you're right. You don't know how you land because something could seem like you're like, wait, I didn't see where he got hurt, but you don't know. You don't know when you land on your head. You see a lot of times in those situations somebody get rolled up onto the back of their leg. I've been hit because I had my arm around somebody. My own teammate at times would come and hit the elbow and hyperextend the elbow, and you see breaks in those situations as well. You just don't know. But the one thing you don't do, Mike, is you don't think about it. You don't think about it during the play because, like anything else, if you think about anything on the field, you're done because you're now going to be too slow, you know, if you're thinking about your job. But then if you're thinking about injury, you're not going to go full bore the way you need to make the play you need to play. And plus, we've been doing it all our lives. By the time we got to that level, it's so ingrained in us to play ball, to see injuries. Hell, at practice, I mean, you see a bad injury, a guy blow a knee out or something, and what do? You move the drill down 20 yards and keep going. I mean, that's how it is. It sucks. It's a shame because you just lost somebody, but you know you still have to finish practice. You know you still have a game coming. You know you still have to finish a game when it happens during a game. It's just what you do. And at that point, you've been doing it so long, you just kind of do it because you know you have to.
The thing that impresses me the most about NFL players is all of the time and the effort that is put into getting the body into peak overall condition, whether it's the ability to exert yourself for a full 60 minutes, the strength necessary, everything to get yourself exactly where you need to be. And then you willingly, knowingly, and voluntarily cross that thick white stripe, fully aware that all that work that was put in to get the body to 100% capacity and performance, it's inevitable that it's going to dip below 100. The question is, how far and how quickly is it going to dip below 100? And you know it. You know it, and you embrace it. And that's one of those little things about football that I wish fans would appreciate more, because from the fans' perspective, it really is next man up. All right, that guy's gone, and the game moves on. Quarterback gets injured, he's out for the year. Game moves on. This guy's gone. Game moves on. Let's keep going. But for the individuals, the mindset to get yourself up to 100, and no, you're putting your hand right into the fire, and it's just a matter of time.
The thing I always, when people ask about, just what you said about, you know, the wear and tear, this is how I put it. When training camp starts, you're at your peak, right? Because you've worked in the offseason, you worked out, you haven't been hitting, so you're at your peak physically, right, when training camp starts. As soon as you take that first hit, it starts to go down. And then during the whole season, your body, just the wear and tear, starts to go down and go down and go down. So then by the end of the season, normally you're at your lowest of your physical because you've put your body through all that. Then you start the offseason again, and you build yourself back up. And what happens over time, The where you build yourself back up to, you don't hit that level you were at maybe the year before or 2 years before. It starts to be a little level before, a little level lower. Then in year six, it's a little level lower. Now, players are doing a way better job of keeping themselves in shape better, so maybe they can get closer to that peak for more years. But that's what happens. Each training camp, you just feel maybe a little less. You're a little older too, but your body maybe went through another surgery in the offseason. You know, I went through 10 while I was playing, one in college and two after, or nine while I was playing, so 12 total. But during the season, then you're rehabbing an injury, trying to get healthy again so you don't get to that top again. And then you start it over again, you beat your body up, and you come back around and you don't get to that top again. And before you know it, you're like, can't do it anymore. Can't do what it takes. Most guys retire who don't have to retire because of injury. Most guys will retire because they don't want to do what's needed to be done from January to September to get ready to play. That's what happens. I play on game day now. I'd get killed, but I'd go put a uniform on and try because I love game day. But you don't want to do all that it takes in the offseason to get to that spot in July of where you need to be. You're just tired of doing that, but you know you have to do it if you're going to succeed.
And the challenge during the season from September to January now to February is to hold on as long as you can. For Baker Mayfield, yep, who dislocated his shoulder week two while making a tackle after a turnover, quarterbacks don't do that. Use Baker Mayfield as an example. Don't do it. He dislocated it again yesterday. He was in a sling after the game. Here he is talking about a shoulder injury. Given the reality, Browns play Thursday night at home against the Broncos.
Feels like
worse than the first time?
Probably. You know what? I get MRIs and stuff tomorrow, so we'll be able to find out more.
Do you have a sense if you'll be able to keep playing through this, Baker?
I do.
Will be able to keep playing through it?
Yes.
Is it, I mean, maybe you don't know yet, but is it the same, like a re-aggravation of the injury? Is it something new?
I mean, it dislocated again and then slipped out again on a non-contact play, so just got to figure out a way to get better.
You know, he's got the desire, he's got the drive, he's got the passion, he's got the second contract still pending. He's got a lot of reasons to want to play through this and to believe that he can, but there's only so much that the will can do in a situation like that. We got a quick turnaround. This is a chronic injury for him. It felt like the first injury, even though it's the non-throwing shoulder, was affecting his performance. And they've got a pretty good backup in Case Keenum. This is going to be a decision that is not going to be an easy one for Coach Kevin Stefanski, because Baker Mayfield may be insisting, Mike, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. I'm sure that happens plenty of times where the player says, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. Somebody else has to be the voice of reason and say, you're not fine, you need some time off. Players don't want to give up that spot, especially at quarterback, because there's no guarantee you're ever going to get it back. Now, I think Baker Mayfield doesn't have to worry about being Wally Pipp by Case Keenum, but still, he doesn't want to give up that spot, not as he's trying to establish himself and get that second contract that he thinks he's already earned.
Right, right. We keep talking about these second quarterbacks, some guys that have already gotten paid in that class, and something that he's looking to get as well. So this one brings back a lot of memories, Mike, because most of my surgeries are on my shoulders, and I had a shoulder, what his is doing, would pop in and out, subluxing. And I played probably the last 5-6 games of the year. That's when it was happening its worst, before I ended up having reconstructive surgery on it after the season. But that's what you live through. It would slide out, slide back in a game, in practice. You know, it would happen. You know, I'm a D lineman, so, you know, luckily for him, it's his off shoulder. It's not his throwing shoulder, but he's going to get it hit a lot more than I would. Mine was more tugging and pulling and feeling the effect of it when I was doing that, and it would slide. So his off shoulder. You know, they can have harnesses now where you can keep it down a little bit. It all depends on his comfort level and how it would affect other things he does, because he is a guy that loves to take off. And he is a guy, though, that when he gets, yesterday fumbled twice and had the one interception. So he's going to get hit. He's that guy that does, because he tries to make something happen. So how much can you do that with a shoulder that, let me just say right now, if he's going to play every week, it's not getting any better. It's not. And you got a lot of season to go. So do you rest it for a couple of weeks to try and have it get a little better? Because as you're going out and getting hit, it's just re-injuring. And every time it slides out and comes back in, it's going to slide out a little easier that next time. That's just what happens. So How much of that can he take? How much affects his performance? And how much until it gets to the point where you say, players want to play. Are you good? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm going to play. Until somebody steps in and takes their helmet and say, you know what? I know you want to play, but we don't think it's good for you right now to play. We don't think the performance is there, or the injury could take itself to the point where it's going to need way more recovery. It sounds like this one already is going to need to get worked on after the season, unless you just do regular rehab on it and not have to go in, because the last thing in the world you want to do is open somebody up and go in. You always want to avoid that. But the longer you keep playing with something like that, the more the odds are it's going to have to get operated on after the season. So how much can he take and how much does it affect his play are the big things going forward, because it's the non-throwing shoulder.
And the easy thing to say about the Browns would be, I'll just put in Case Keenum. You got a great running game. Well, Nick Chubb missed the game with a calf injury. And Kareem Hunt, the 1A to Nick Chubb's 1, he had a non-contact calf injury. Coach Kevin Stefanski said after the game, it's not an Achilles. But it did not look good, and they play again in 3 days. Even if it is a strain of the calf or whatever, the chances of him being ready to go full speed by Thursday night, I would not put a major wager on that. So it's going to be next man up at the running back position. It may be next man up at the quarterback position. And this is what happens. We spend the whole offseason talking about what teams may do with this presumption that it's going to be this perfect bubble of health, because we're not going to start guessing who's going to get injured and when, but that's the reality. The injuries can change everything. Now, some teams are going to find a way to fight through injury and adversity, and that's the team or teams that end up playing in the conference championship games. And how about the Cardinals? With everything they went through, Mike, to show up in Cleveland, where it just felt like they were due to lose. The 5-0 was inflated. Yeah. They should have lost a couple of those games. They go to Cleveland against a desperate Browns team that was better than 3-2 and is better than 3-3. Your record is what you say you are. They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook. Whatever it is, I'm mixing up my football quotes. But at the same time, the Browns have to be thinking that maybe Juju Smith-Schuster was right. The Browns is the Browns, because they got to start winning some games, or people are going to start scratching them off as a high-end contender in the AFC.
Well, I'm offensively, we know what their game is. The two-headed running back, and then you mix in some Baker Mayfield with the weapons they have, and now as you just mentioned, they're hurt. All of them are hurt. The main ones are hurt between the quarterback and the two running backs. So let's see where they go. Oh, by the way, they played yesterday without both starting offensive tackles, and it showed. The amount of pressure on Baker, what was he sacked? I think 5 times and hit a lot more than that. I mean, there was pressure coming from the outside, and he didn't have a lot of places to step up. So not having the offensive linemen there hurt them as well. But what's been a little surprising to me is the defense. This is a second-rate defense statistically by yards, and they certainly have been anything but the last 2 weeks. Giving up a lot of points last week. I thought it would have been a hell of a week this past week of preparation of them being ticked off and saying, we need to answer the bell better and show we are one of the best defenses in the league. And they would get obviously a big test against a team like Arizona. And Arizona, again, I mean, this is a team in Cleveland that gives up, I think, less than 90 yards on the ground. Arizona almost got 150 on the ground. I mean, the Cleveland defense needs to step up better, especially when you get injuries on one side of the ball. We have these meetings all the time. You know, in the other room is, hey, they got injuries over there. We got to step up. We got to do more. Now, does that make you try and do too much at times? Possibly. But you do have to step up. You got to pick each other up. And this is one of those times where the defense needs to pick up the offense a little more because of the injuries. And they haven't done it in the last couple of weeks.
And Mike, we're way over. But I want to take something about the Browns and pull it back to something you said earlier about the Ravens, the team that used to be the Browns. 7 points allowed against the Vikings, 6 points allowed against the Bears the week before that. Since then, 47 to the Chargers, 37 to the Cardinals. I wonder how much the Browns are changing things up. I wonder how many looks these offenses are getting that they didn't expect. This is how the coaching matters. And if you're not changing things up and you become predictable, they figure out pathways to dealing with your best guys like a Myles Garrett and getting around your other guys and gaining yards and scoring points. So the Browns may need to start coming up with some different looks and different approaches on defense, because 47 and 37, my math skills are very limited, but that's 84 points in two games after giving up 13. Are you kidding me? Browns got some work to do, and they only got a few days to do it because the Broncos are coming to town. All right, let's take a break. The Raiders beat the Broncos yesterday after a very emotional and difficult week. We'll talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Certainly, it's emotional for everybody, right? So I think they did a good job as a bunch of grown men of handling their emotions throughout the week, putting them in perspective when it was time to go play the game. It is a job for all of us, and again, they seem to do a really, really good job with it. We'll see what goes on from here. We'll see the consistency that we can have going on. I think that'll be the challenge for all of us.
We're all human. We all have stuff going on in life, right? Y'all got stuff going on, but I'm sure when you're in your work, you're in your work, you know. Especially if you got a deadline or you got something to do, but you got to get it done, you know. And so it's definitely easier during those times. It definitely sucks not hugging Gru after a game like that, you know. Some of the plays we ran, you know, and all that kind of stuff, he would have been so fired up, you know, to see his face. But it is what it is, you know. We got to move forward, but definitely for those 3 hours, it's easy. Definitely, it's not easy, but it's easier to just focus on football for sure.
Derek Carr, quarterback of the Raiders. Before that, Rich Bisaccia, the interim head coach. Mike, when we talked about the John Gruden situation a week ago, it kind of felt like he was going to weather the storm. Now, he knew, and maybe Mark Davis knew, and others clearly knew, the rest of us didn't, though, about the other emails that were going to come out Monday night and cause John Gruden to resign. But when you think of what the Raiders have gone through, beyond just taking away their coach is gone. He's out of the mix. One of the more enigmatic and strong personalities in the NFL, gone. The aftermath of what he did, the questions that would arise going forward. If I was a player on that team, I'd look at Rich Bisaccia and say, well, you're Gruden's guy. How do I know you're any different than him? How do I know? I haven't seen your emails. I don't know. You know, you guys were close for a long time. Maybe you're just like him. I mean, that's all the stuff that's got to be processed through the week, and they did it. They got it together. They pressed the right buttons. They went to Denver, and they got a win that few expected them to get, and they came together in a big way. Now, I don't know what it's going to translate to going forward, but it was impressive to see them find a way to get everyone on the same page and get it done against one of their most bitter rivals.
So what happens, Mike, is sometimes that things that happen with a team, where you're affected most when you're outside of the locker room, because that's when you hear the noise here and there and you're not really doing anything team-related. The safe haven for the players is when you're in the meeting room and you're on the field, on the practice field. Now you're doing football. When I have a game plan in front of me, I got to study that game plan. It's not wondering if Coach Bisaccia is like John Gruden. Everybody kind of gets the benefit of the doubt until you don't get the benefit of the doubt anymore. So I don't think there were many eyes on him that said, I'm wondering if you're like John. It was like, okay, you're our leader now. I live an itinerary. Football players live an itinerary life. Okay, be here at this time, wear this, we're doing this at this time, you got to be out on the field at this time, you got to lift at this time, what am I doing next? What are we doing to prepare for the game? What do I have to do? Because at the end of this all of this, it is self-preservation. Each player, and everybody's in a different position, not everybody's the star. There's a lot of, I call them foot soldiers out there, who want to have a job and want to keep a job and want a new contract, or if they don't get one in there, want to be with another team. So they know they got to do this when they get in the meeting room. They got to get in the weight room and do this, and they have to take care of their job. That's all you ask of every teammate. Take care of your responsibility. There's a lot of this going on right now, and it can't get any more damning than it being your head coach and him running the gamut on you know, saying what he said about all the different people he said it about. I mean, it blows your mind what he did. So I get people sitting in the locker room going, okay, maybe I thought he wasn't, you know, but did anybody think he was that, you know, that he would offend that many people? I think that surprised some folks. So I get it if you're in the locker room going, wow, I didn't see all this coming. But, okay, then I'm in the meeting room. Now I have the game plan. Now I got to focus. You know, and it is the job of the new coach. It is the job of all the individual coaches. And it's the job of the player and the leaders of that team, the veteran leadership of that team, saying, we can't. The one thing you have to understand is say, we can't control it. We can't control what John said, how it came out, that he had to resign, all the press conferences. What can we control? We can control what goes on in this meeting room, in this weight room, and on that field. That's what we can control, and that's what we need to do. And kudos to them for being able to do it. And I'm not saying everybody can do it. We're not robots. You're human beings. So it can affect different people in different ways. But kudos to them for having the focus to say, okay, we got to get back to football and playing football because that's what we do. Come Sunday, whether we're playing at 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock, 8 o'clock or Monday, you know what's going to happen? There's going to be a game. They're not stopping the games because we lost our head coach. So we damn well better be ready. And they were.
They will return home this weekend to face the Philadelphia Eagles. And then the Raiders have week 8 off, week 9 at the Giants. Couple of winnable games before we see them on NBC Sunday Night Football, week 10, November 14. The Chiefs at the Raiders. So they could pick up a couple of wins. And that could be one hell of a game coming up in a few weeks, about 4 weeks away, the Chiefs at the Raiders, and we'll see if the Raiders can keep going. Now, look, there are many other layers and levels to the story. We only have 2 hours today. Yeah. We have full coverage. We're not shying away from it. We addressed it last night on Football Night in America with the emails and where it goes from here. We've got a lot of stories about it on PFT. I'll have more reporting today. We just don't have time because we got to take a break. And when we return, we're going to get into the superlatives for week 6 of the 2021 NFL season. We'll do that next here on PFT Live.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.